It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hey, everybody, this is Greg Gutfeld. This is The One. I'm very excited about my next guest. His name is William McKeever, and he's got a great new book about sharks called Emperors of the Deep. McKeever writes books and produces films about ocean conservation, but his new book is a result of his 2-year journey around the world to reveal sharks in a new light, mainly because people like me in the media keep putting them in a bad light. And William, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Greg.
Great.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to do this podcast after Shark Week because, like, every time this drives me crazy about the media in the summertime, all of a sudden you have cable shows and stuff talking about people getting attacked by sharks. And they never tell you, or they never tell you the obvious explanation is that there's about 20 times the number of people on a beach during this month. And so the fact that you have one shark attack in Florida or in New Jersey is not a story, but yet it people just get so excited to hear about the fact that there's this evil beast lurking, you know, off the sand.
Yeah, that's so true. There's a fascination with it, and I think it all goes back to the movie Jaws and this idea that sharks are out there hunting us, and it's a primordial fear of being eaten alive, and so it just plays to the human psyche. And of course, the reality is very different, that sharks are, you know, they're out there hunting, and this is their wilderness where they live. Mm-hmm. And we're just not on that menu for them. So if they come across us, most of the time, they just swim away. They have more important things to do.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, the myth is out there that it's just the opposite. So it's a mission to make people realize what really is the truth here with sharks.
Yeah, you know, and you brought up, I had in my notes, I was going to talk about Jaws. Because I guess I was 9 years old or 8 years old. I was 8 years old when Jaws came out. Never thought about sharks. Never thought about them. And the movie's based on a book by Peter Benchley. I don't think people realize what kind of, like, stranglehold that movie had on the American public in the summertime. It was a huge deal, and everybody was talking about it. And the slogan to the movie was, "Don't go in the water, or you won't go in the water again," or it was something like that. The poster was amazing. How much damage did this movie do to the shark population over the last, I don't know, maybe 40? It's got to be 40 years.
Yeah, it's been 40 years, and it did a tremendous damage, and it just left people either fearful of going in the water. Mm-hmm. Or this view that, again, the great whites are out there. If they're coming across a human, they're going to automatically attack. And Peter Benchley, of course, who wrote Jaws, realized that he had created a great error.
Right.
And he was diving off of the Cocos Islands, and he saw all these sharks that had been finned alive, and their bodies were rotting on the seafloor. And he had an epiphany, which was to spend the rest of his life making people realize that sharks are not these hunters of man, that they are actually very valuable, remarkable creatures. And we need to flip the equation on its head. It's not that people should be afraid of sharks. It's sharks that should be afraid of people, because when you look at the numbers, 100 million sharks are killed every year. And last year, there were 4 people killed around the world.
Yeah.
So there's just no comparison. And this myth, you know, I was up in Martha's Vineyard where they filmed Jaws, and they're still showing the film. To my mind, we should ban Jaws.
Yes.
It is irresponsible to show this film, especially to children. It leaves them with a concept that's totally false.
Yeah. Could you imagine? I mean, I was thinking of, If this had been applied to, like, dogs, but there was a movie, Cujo, but it didn't have the same impact. But I work among just rampant dog lovers. If there had been a movie that caused the extermination of 200 million dogs, that movie would not exist. That movie would be banned. Everybody would be in jail.
Yeah.
Because everybody, like, it is, it's, and the sobering truth is that dogs probably kill more people a day than what sharks kill in a year. Like, if you're talking about four fatalities by sharks a year, I'm sure you can find in the United States maybe four fatalities caused by dogs, maybe in a week, maybe in a day. Who knows? I should have looked that up before I called you.
Yeah, well, Greg, you're absolutely right. And I do have the statistics in the book, Emperors of the Deep. Mm-hmm. I have a chapter just on shark attacks. And in the United States, there is less than one death per year.
Right.
So if you are bit, it is usually very minor, and you go home and you have a story to tell your friends. And just about every other creature that's out there, you mentioned dogs, ants actually kill more people. And the same thing is true with bees, because people have an allergic reaction.
Yeah.
And there are people who get killed by waves. The ocean can be a dangerous place. The number of boating accidents a year is 300.
Mm-hmm.
Number of people that drown is 3,000. That's what you really should be afraid of when you go to the beach, of drowning.
Yeah.
The shark should be the last thing on your mind. You could be enjoying it. And yet, you know, I find people come up to me and say, you know, I get the message in the book, but I just still don't, I can't believe it. And I just think, you know, it's sad that they're wasting the psychic energy when they're going swimming.
Yeah. You know, It illustrates also how language and culture can shape how we view things. And when I think about the way sharks are portrayed, and maybe you might disagree with me, but I feel like it's the same way we portray drugs. That, like, you know, we banned and demonized therapeutic substances and imprisoning those who use them, while, like, booze kills millions of people. Booze, you know, alcohol by far damages more lives, but we're focused on drugs. And I always feel like that's kind of like the way the sharks are portrayed. Am I making a ridiculous, absurdist leap?
No, I think you're getting at the kernel of the truth here, which is that there are things out there that we worry about that we just shouldn't. We overemphasize them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as you were saying, with drugs and alcohol, alcohol does tremendous damage. And, mm-hmm. and you look at the deaths caused by other means, it's just not related to sharks. So that's a fair point. When you look at the fishing happening around the world,
mm-hmm.
and these casualties for sharks are so horrendous, people think, well, you know, it's a shark after all, and who cares about sharks? And we really should change that, because sharks, as apex predators, stand at the highest level in the marine food pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And at that level, they help to maintain balance in the ocean. And when sharks are removed, it causes a trophic cascade throughout the system. You know, there are half a billion people on the planet that rely on fishing for a living. Obviously, we consume tremendous amounts of seafood. And if we take the sharks out, that's going to damage both jobs and the food that we eat, literally,
mm-hmm.
because of where sharks are on the food pyramid in the ocean.
Yeah, and it's amazing, because I read, you know, in your book, sharks have survived five extinction-level events. We've killed, like you said, we've killed 100 million sharks. How many sharks are there at any given time in the world, you think?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I've asked the question to several scientists, and the sad truth is we just don't know.
Yeah.
There's still a mystery about sharks. We don't know how many great white sharks are out there. We know, for example, how many lions there are, maybe 25,000 in the world, but we don't know. It could be a few hundred to a few thousand.
Mm.
And many shark species are really suffering. Those sharks that are out in the deep ocean, like the oceanic white tip and the silky and the dusky shark, those populations in the last 30, 40 years are down 80%. So we just can't continue this kind of decimation to the sharks, because they're like us. They take a long time to mature. It can take a great white, for example, 2 to 3 decades before they reproduce. And when they do, like us, they only have a few pups.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is not like other fish that can literally lay a million eggs.
Yeah.
And so when the shark populations are hurt, they do not snap back the way other fish populations do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that puts the whole situation in a different light, that we just can't wait much longer, or else in many parts of the world, sharks are going to be gone. And in Australia, where sharks in some areas were overfished and gone, the reefs that were there literally died, because part of that reef ecosystem, you need to have balance. You need to have all the creatures there doing their job. Diversity is key. And when the predators that were sort of in the middle of the food pyramid, they started feasting on the parrotfish. And for those of you who may be familiar with diving or snorkeling, parrotfish are the ones that they keep the reef clean. They get rid of the algae growing on it. Mm-hmm. So when the sharks weren't there to patrol to keep the parrotfish basically safe, the sharks were acting like police, the parrotfish population was decimated. The algae then took over the reef, smothered it, and killed it. Mm. So that's just one example of where sharks are crucial to an ecosystem. And then, of course, you go throughout the ocean. There are many different ecosystems there. There are seagrass ecosystems, and we can go into this if you want to, but again, they're crucial in that environment, even in the deep oceans.
Yeah, you know, so William, you did touch on something that made me think. You talked about their how many pups they have, and I was wondering, it just made me think about what a shark's sex life is like. Is there any interesting things that you can tell my viewers that they didn't know about the shark's sex life?
Yeah, there's a lot that people don't know about shark sex. And, of course, I first have to say it's a wonderful thing that they have this. But it's very tough on the females. Mm. The males need to somehow get a hold of the female, and they obviously use their mouth. And so the females can get quite tattered up. And pictures that I have on my website show the sharks just cut up. Now, the females over time have developed a skin that's three times thicker than the male so that they can handle this kind of treatment.
Ah, okay.
And but the female obviously doesn't want to go through this very often. So for great whites, for example, a female will not breed except once every 2 years.
When they do breed,
they, like us, they have a gestation period that's actually a little bit longer, around 11 months.
Wow.
And so it's for an apex predator, they have to be smart. Sharks don't have mothers to teach them, so they have to learn. And so it takes them a long time to mature in the womb and then develop. And so they're more human-like than they are fish-like.
Would you consider them to be social animals? I mean, do they communicate and argue with each other? Or I don't know. I mean, I don't know their size or their brains, but are they social?
Yes, they are. And of course, it varies by species. There are 500 species of sharks, so they keep on finding them. There was one species discovered that actually glows in the dark.
Mm.
And the big sharks tend to be not so social, but when you get to the typical shark, which is actually only 3-4 feet long, many of them can be very social. For example, lemon sharks. And I have a chapter devoted to this, the book Emperors of the Deep, devoted to the sociability. These little lemon sharks that are growing up in the mangroves in Bahamas and Florida, they actually pair up and they have buddies that they travel around the mangroves with. And they tend to learn from the older sharks where to hunt, how to hunt. And we had thought years ago that sharks were solitary animals. They are just lone hunters. And that's not the case at all. They're also many species are hierarchical, and they actually, when they get together and aggregate in groups, and this was one of the things I found fascinating when I was in Hawaii, is sharks, even though they're big and strong, have to worry about being eaten by other sharks, particularly tiger sharks. And they're so afraid that many of these different species of sharks aggregate in a group for safety. And off Hawaii, they'll congregate around 200 feet down, spend the day down there, and then at night when it's safer, they disperse and go off. So these aggregations, they're social. These are ways to protect themselves. This is not about mating because these are all different species. So again, it shows we're learning about sharks. We still have a lot to learn. And this aspect of their social ability is new and gives us, I think, so, you know, a new respect for them.
So, William, didn't you used to work on Wall Street? How did you end up becoming obsessed with sharks? How did you end up in this from one shark feed to another?
Yes. Well, fortunately, these sharks are actually safer to be with than the land sharks.
I bet.
I'll tell you that from experience. And what happened was, you know, I'd always loved the ocean. And, you know, on vacation, I went out to Montauk, Eastern Long Island, and I stumbled on a shark tournament. And a shark tournament is where fishermen go out to catch the biggest fish. And they bring these sharks back to the dock and they weigh them. And the winner gets a prize and they gamble. But when they're done, the sharks just end up in a landfill. And when I saw that, I thought, this is such a waste. It's like going out in the forest and doing a contest with bears or mountain lions or even lions in South Africa. And here I saw them strung up like criminals that deserve to be executed. And so it got me on this journey. Mm-hmm. And as I kept learning about them, I realized that how, as horrible as shark tournaments are, there is around the world this massacre taking place, particularly on the high seas, because of the way tuna is caught.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we get that can of tuna at the supermarket for $1.99, there's a reason for its being that cheap, which is a whole other story. But sharks are actually tied up into that catching of tuna. And it is leading to a potential catastrophe if it continues.
All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Now, William, do all lipsticks contain... I guess it's called squalene, squalene comes from the shark. It's what is it? But I mean, like, I wonder if people realize that like when they're putting on their lipstick, they're putting on something that's made of shark.
Yeah, it's remarkable that sharks are not just killed in tournaments and long mining operations, but for all kinds of frivolous things, as you said, cosmetics. Squalene is a fatty substance that's in the shark. Mm-hmm. Obviously, not all cosmetics are made with this, but some are. Sharks take their skin and turn them into purses. They take the cartilage, grind it down, and turn it into vitamin supplements for saying the shark cartilage doesn't cause cancer, which is absolutely not true.
Right. I remember that. I remember that fad. Yeah. It was like in probably the 80s, and then it keeps coming back, this shark cartilage thing. There's always a huckster in the 80s. Did it, and then it comes back in the 90s, goes away, and then it keeps coming back. Somebody else picks it up, you know, because it never goes away.
I was in a supermarket, and there was shark cartilage on the windowsill there. It just made me crazy to think that people are doing that. So for all these things, sharks are being killed, and I think that as consumers, that people need to think about the their seafood purchases, where does it come from? And the easiest thing to do is to make sure that you buy American seafood, because we have the best rules and regulations in the world. We do ban shark finning in this country, and so you can feel fairly secure that the seafood you're getting is not ending up killing sharks.
Yeah. Well, William, the book's fascinating, and you also have, I believe you have a movie coming out based on it in 2020?
Yes, that's right. So I have a movie of the same name, Emperors of the Deep, The Shark, and submitting to festivals this fall, hopefully out in the second quarter of 2020. And it follows the book. Obviously, the book can go into more detail about sharks. And I do start off with a description about the big four, the great white, the tiger, the mako, and the hammerhead, and what science has learned about them the last 5 to 10 years. It's really been a remarkable period where our knowledge of these animals has literally exploded. And for example, great white sharks, no one had any idea that they can dive down to 4,000 feet. They're hunting something down there. We're not sure what it is. And when they travel, they migrate actually in the wintertime to warmer climes, and that can take them anywhere from journeys that last 1 to 2,000 miles out in the open ocean. And the way that they do that is remarkable. And I won't go into details on that, but it's all in the book. And And we get a new appreciation for sharks when we learn about them and how fantastic they are. And I would just say one last thing, that one of my missions is to have people seek sharks out in eco-tourist environments. So you may live in an area where there's shark cage diving. That's true in Florida.
Yeah.
There's shark cage diving off of Rhode Island and now eastern Long Island. And once you get in the cage with a shark, you realize, number one, is they're not interested.
Right.
They have more important things to think about. And two, when you get up close to them, you just see how magnificent they are and that they're really not interested in us at all.
You know, I think I'm going to leave you with my one stupid theory. I believe that dolphins have gotten off easy in this whole world because they are always look like they're smiling, and sharks don't smile. So the whole thing is like everybody thinks dolphins are friendly, but they're not, are they? I mean, they're kind of like they're no less friendly or more. They're no more friendly than a shark. That's my stupid theory.
Yeah.
You don't have to indulge it. You can tell me I'm an idiot. It's okay.
No, Greg, that's actually a very good theory. And I should encourage, because, you know, 10, 20 years ago, everybody was nuts about dolphins.
Right.
And now there's great interest in sharks, which I think is fantastic. And people want to learn about them and understand them. And dolphins can be pretty rough.
Right.
They penalize each other in their groups, and they can beat each other up. And then they talk about dolphin sex, gang up on the females and chase the females, even though they want nothing to do with the males.
Yep.
And, you know, they're not, again, wild animals, particularly apex predators, they're not just cute and cuddly. To respect them. And I think we need to look at sharks and dolphins in the right context, which is apex predators that play a very important role. Let's leave them alone. Let them do their thing. And when we go in the water, just be very respectful of them. And then everything we can have, you know, we can have our cake and eat it too, and that we can go swimming, enjoy that, have our seafood, and we don't have to worry.
Awesome. Well, William McKeever, it was a pleasure talking to you. The name of the book is Emperors of the Deep, Sharks, the Ocean's Most Mysterious, Most Misunderstood, and Most Important Guardians. You could probably buy it at anywhere you want. Amazon is easy as well. Thank you, William. Good talking to you.
Thank you, Greg. Wonderful to catch up with you.
Great. Take care.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.